Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of The Diplomat with our respected honorable guest, Ambassador Dr. Ali Ajami. Dr. Ali Ajami, welcome again.
Thank you.
To Dearborn Blog podcast. We stopped at 1984 amidst the Israeli occupation of South Lebanon up to the borders of the capital. We will continue our episode today from that point.
Okay.
Let's start with the establishment of the Cultural Forum of Al-Abbasiyya, Al-Muntada Al-Thaqafi fi Al-Abbasiyya, 1984. What were the circumstances of its establishment?
It was just a way how to stand against occupation. You know, there are a lot of ways to resist. One of them is to hold arms, guns, and to fight. The other one is to fight culturally. And that's what I did with a group of friends at Abbasi, my hometown. We established, you could tell, the first cultural movement organizing lectures, weekly lectures at the Husayniya for about, it went on about 8 months till the withdrawal of the Israelis from our part of South Lebanon. And we were really astonished to see that Husayniya was full house every time, every week. Can you imagine doing, organizing cultural events to fight the occupation when you are under occupation? It wasn't easy.
What day was it of the week?
It was every Wednesday.
Why did you pick that day?
Just like this. Well, why did you pick it here? It just came up like this. Uh-huh. But it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Just to see at that time people were so close together. Mm-hmm. So close, when I say so close, I could tell you millions of incidents that took place during the resistance, mm-hmm. showing how people were really, solidarity among each other. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing, amazing. At that time, I was working also as a journalist, combining both journalism from one side and cultural activity from the other side. And it went well. I was, due to all these, I was arrested by the Israelis 1985. Mm-hmm. It was on a very cold day in February, mm-hmm. very rainy day when they came and took me from my house, mm-hmm. my residence in Abbasiyya. Yeah.
There was an arrest that you spoke to us about last time.
Yeah.
When they questioned you about Muhammad Sa'd.
Yeah.
Is that the arrest you're talking about?
Yes.
How did you, just a little glimpse at the details, how did you, the idea came that you want to start the cultural forum?
Yeah.
As a form of resistance. Yeah. You are an intellect, you're a journalist, and that's the way you resist. What are the few steps, just for the sake of history, what are the few steps that you took to make this happen?
Just call upon a bunch of friends that we usually meet every day. You know, when you are under occupation, you don't have the freedom to move around. So we are in, at night you cannot move at all. Yani, you're almost blocked within either your house or your neighborhood or your village in the wide range. Mm-hmm. So a couple of friends, we were about 5-6 persons, we were meeting almost every day. And then we started, and I told them about the idea, they welcomed it, and then we called upon others. We were about 10 persons when we started a meeting to put this idea to implement it, and we did it. Just it came up just like this.
And the choice of the Husayniyah, was it the first choice you had?
We don't have any other one.
You don't have any other. That's no other basically place, where people yes. met.
Exactly, because there were no place to meet, a big place to be able to bring all these people. Sometimes we would be having 200, 300, 400, 500 mm-hmm. persons in the Husayniyah.
Right. In your CV, you mentioned that the establishment of the Cultural Forum for Abbasiyah was in 1980. Was it
1984?
It was 84.
Yeah.
Abbasiyah at that time is a very, very small village.
Not a small one at all. Abbasiyah is the biggest town in Sur area.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to talk about geographical area, it's bigger than Beirut itself.
Mm-hmm. In terms of population?
No.
It's a very small town.
No, it's not a small town. We are about 15,000 mm-hmm. inhabitants.
The question is, why didn't you think of establishing the forum at a bigger city?
This is my hometown. Mm-hmm. This is where I belong.
Was it more convenient? More,
for sure.
It's easier
for sure.
to put together.
Yeah. But you know, this idea, establishing this forum, cultural mm-hmm. forum, was a little bit, as they say, contagious.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, after the withdrawal of the Israelis from, because under occupation, it was we were the only one. Mm-hmm. Even in Sur, which is about 5 miles from from Abbasi, it's not mm-hmm. so far.
Was Nadi Imam Sadiq?
There were Nadi Tadamun.
Mm-hmm.
Nadi Tadamun al-Thaqaf al-Ijtima'i. That was, but it was not active.
Mm-hmm.
The only active.
What about Nadi Imam Sadiq? It wasn't active?
No. The only active, real active, mm-hmm. Real activity, cultural activity was our forum.
Mm-hmm.
After the Israeli withdrawal by April 1985, we started seeing establishment of several cultural forums in the surrounding villages in the neighborhood, and then it went. I feel that we just sent this,
mm-hmm.
yeah, send this message, and know how important is the cultural activity is mm-hmm. towards inhabitants too, and it still, you know, this muntada, this cultural forum is still active till today.
Yes,
till today. You know, after 30 years, 35 years, still
that's
there.
Amazing. And yeah. Does it still meet on Wednesdays?
No. They have now, we have our own building. It was donated by
mm-hmm.
some people from my hometown. They donated the land and they built up the place. And we have it still there every month, I think they have. I always communicate with them, but I mean, it's theirs now.
Yes. Who's running it right now?
The man in charge, his name is Dr. Muhammad Hamoud.
Mm-hmm.
He was my student.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the general director.
Yes. During that time, Doctor, you also have published a few books. The Fool in 1981.
Yeah.
What's the name of it in Arabic?
المجنون لوحات من الحرب الأهلية اللبنانية الحرب اللبنانية.
Can you tell us about this book?
Yeah, and it talks about a personality who is his name is Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
He is supposed to be a fool, mm-hmm. crazy, and it's about 10 or 11 short stories, each one the same
character. Different situations.
Just watching around what's happening in the civil war in Lebanon.
Was it kind of a reflection of what you witnessed as a journalist?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But the most important part was the idea of the book in general.
Mm-hmm.
He is the fool. He is the crazy. But by the end, all readers will come to a result, stable result, that he is the only sane person in Lebanon, and all the other are insane.
Yes. During that time, the concept of the fool or al-Majnoon, the crazy, person who is actually the most aware, was prominent in Lebanese literature, was expressed even in Ziad Rahbani's plays, Rashid, the personality of Rashid, etc. And in 1982, you published Maybe It Was a Dream. It was a dream. Maybe it was a dream.
Yeah.
What's the name in Arabic?
It's a short. ربما كان حلما.
ربما كان.
It's also a short story.
Is it a novel?
No.
Short story.
I never wrote. I started writing a novel, but I didn't finish it. I find myself in short stories, although just to. It should be known that short stories is not an easy thing to do.
No, it's not. Mm-hmm.
It's just like capturing light. You have to capture the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Capture it. It might take 1 page, 2 pages, 10 pages. But you have to capture something in it.
Mm-hmm. And in 1982 also, you published The Fox and His Body. Is that... was that a book for children or...?
Yeah. It was not a book. It's six short stories, each one published separately. Six books.
So six series.
A series of six six short stories about the fox. Thalab and Thalub. Mughamarat Thalab, the adventures of Thalab and Thalub and his buddy. It's for kids. Where did this come from? I mean... You know, in 1970,
the adventures of the fox and his
and
buddy.
His buddies. Yes, in 1978, that was my first step in journalism. I started by working, establishing, and then continuing working in a magazine for kids. It was the prominent, the most well-known magazine for kids. It's called Samer, Mujallad Samer lil Atfal. It was really something. And those writers who used to publish it were, yani if you talk about Nasr al-Sayegh, talk about Yasin Rafaiyeh, he was the editor-in-chief, Yasin Rafaiyeh.
Mm-hmm.
You know Yasin Rafaiyeh, Syrian, late Yasin Rafaiyeh.
Mm-hmm.
So I was one of the main writers who established this magazine, 1978. I wrote several stories for this magazine, and from there it came the idea of this book, Mughamarat Thalab wa Thalub.
In the meanwhile, you were also pursuing your master's degree in Arabic literature.
Yes.
1985.
Yes, I finished my bachelor degree in 1982. And I registered for my master's and I continued working. 1985, I published my thesis. And
what was your thesis about?
It was really something. Beirut al-Harb fi al-Qissa al-Libaniya al-Mu'asira. And the war of Beirut, seen through novels and short stories. And even my PhD later, 1998, was the same topic. Beirut, the social face, seen through novels and short stories. Elsewhere, if it's not like this, somebody would ask me. I still remember when I defended my PhD, one of the professors was asking me, why didn't you do it in social studies? Why literature? Beirut الوجه الاجتماعي. Beirut, the social face. Why not? And you should have done it at social studies, not in faculty of letters. And the answer was so quick. I mean, I'm not making a survey, going to people, ask them how did things happening. It was, I was following the steps of this evolution of social traditions, social ideas in Lebanon, in Beirut, which is a symbol of Lebanon, through the characters of the novels published during this period.
Mm-hmm.
See the difference?
Yes.
That's what made it
literature.
Yeah.
And then you pursued, as you've mentioned, your PhD.
PhD 1998.
Yes. We have...
It took me 10 years.
Right.
I registered in 1988, mm-hmm. and it took me 10 complete years.
Of work.
Wow. You know, now if I want to do it, the same one, it might take 1 year. Even less. See, at that time, we didn't have internet.
Right.
We didn't have
the resources. Yes.
To go search for resources, you have to go and knock on the doors. Of even not only the public libraries of the universities. No, you have to go even to private universities, private libraries, personal libraries, just to search for resources. It was really tough. It wasn't easy.
And you're talking in the middle of the war, too. So.
And I was a diplomat at that time, too.
Yeah, 1992.
I was traveling.
Right.
And I started the first copy I had made of the PhD. I was in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
I published it. And I printed it out at Ain Shams University.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was transferred to Brazil.
Uh-huh.
I sent the copy over to my professor, supervisor, Dr. Roger Fanous.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, you have to do some modifications.
Mm-hmm.
What can I, in Brazil, where could you find Arabic resources? And I found something very interesting. I found a man from Bintijbel.
Mm-hmm.
Hajjaj Salami Bazzi.
Mm-hmm.
Hajjaj Salami Bazzi. I went to, he was living in a city about 200 miles from Brasilia, the capital city. The name of the village, city is Guayana, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
He had a 10,000 books library, Arabic books library, in that part of Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And it was of great help to me. And he said, you can take it all, anything you need, you can.
That's great. Before we get to your diplomatic career, doctor, we have from 1985 to 1992... Can you talk to us about this period? We know that you've almost left journalism about that time.
No.
When did you leave journalism?
I left exactly 1989. I was forced to go to take my family and my kids to a safer place because I was threatened.
Mm-hmm.
I almost was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
I was threatened,
mm-hmm.
and I was forced to leave.
1989.
89. I went with my kids, with my family and kids to Switzerland,
mm-hmm.
for 2 years. And despite this, I kept on working with journalism from there. I kept writing essays or... Mm-hmm. Giving news to some magazine.
We'll get back to this incident.
Yeah.
Before that, I want to ask you it's a person, this personal story of your marriage. So when did you meet Em Hassan? How did you meet her?
Yeah.
And
in fact, Yani, when I first met her, she was my student.
Mm-hmm.
And this might be amazing. I know the American mentality won't accept it.
It's frowned upon, yeah.
But she was my student in Abbasiyeh.
Mm-hmm.
I was a teacher. You know, I started teaching 1970-71.
Mm-hmm.
At the school, she was a student there. I taught her for about, I was her teacher for 4 years,
mm-hmm.
from 1970 to 1974.
Nice.
And during this period, I was a great, very personal friendship and relation with her family, with her father, late father, and with mm-hmm. her brothers. And from there, it just happened. And
mm-hmm.
we got engaged by 1974, and then... we got married by the first year of the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
1975. And you are talking next year, it will be 45 years of marriage.
Mm-hmm. Mashallah. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
And
you know, sometimes I would tell her, how could you take it? How could you take me for 45 years? Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. Was when did you know that this is the woman that you want to be married to?
The same year, in 19, you could say, any 1 year before we got engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, you taught
hundreds of students. What stood up
you
about
know, always, her? Always the teacher will be a symbol for all his students, mainly female students, to love. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about that part. I don't know here if it's the same, mm-hmm. but at that part of the world, always. A teacher is a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Students would love him, would be so attached to him. She is still very, very beautiful. She was the beauty of the school. She was the beauty of the village. She was very small. At that time, she was only 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got married, 75, she was 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
And did any of your poetry come out at that time?
Writing in general didn't start till later.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I started writing into writing in general. I remember the first poem I wrote was in 1965, 1966. I was a student at the seventh grade, and we had I was at an Etihad school in Sour.
Mm-hmm.
It was the best school in South Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
And looking out the results and the improvements.
Well, weren't many schools anyway at that time.
Yeah, but this one, there was a Jafariya, this one, Al-Ittihad was really top,
mm-hmm.
top. And we had, I remember, most of our teachers were Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
And that, Ustaz Mansour, he was the Arabic professor, teacher, and I loved him this much. And I loved Arabic language because of him. And I remember I wrote the first poem about Palestinian how they
struggle,
how they mm-hmm. are.
So your seventh grade Arabic teacher is the inspiration behind your Arabic career that you later stumbled upon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love this. Mansour.
Always goes back to a teacher.
I don't know where Regina. Yeah.
Every great story starts with a teacher somewhere.
It should be. Yeah.
Hassan was born a couple years after marriage.
Hanan was Hanan the first was one. First. She was born 1977, 2 years after marriage.
And then Hassan.
Then came Hassan 1978, and then Bilal 1984, and finally Yemen 1985, 86, sorry.
So by the time we get to 1989, Doctor, you're married, you have four children, you're living partly under the heavy engagement with the Israelis, between the Lebanese resistance and the Israelis in Lebanon. Tell us about the incidences of 1989 and what caused you to leave Lebanon.
In fact, at that time, till 1989, I was still working as a journalist, and I was a very, very successful journalist. I was the correspondent of about, it reached one time to about 16 different newspapers, magazines, wow. News agencies, included international ones like Reuters and Agence France-Presse, and radio stations like the Lebanese radio station, like a lot of... I was really very, very successful. And at that time, we weren't many. We were about only three or four journalists. That's it. Don't forget, at that time there were no cell phones, no social media, nothing. So it wasn't easy to broadcast the news. So I continued after the Israeli withdrawal from Sur area to the southern the borders. I continued working as a journalist, and I witnessed a lot of incidents, like, for example, the assassination of Dawood and his buddies, the struggle for how the Amal movement took over the area in the south, and then how Hezbollah came over, and then the war, the civil war between both fractions, Shiite fractions, till 1999, I just received letters of threatening.
1989.
89, yes. I received threatening letters. I was shot at, I don't know, I can't... I cannot accuse anyone, but it was as if a message to me, you are not, I mean, your writings are not welcome. Because I'm sure that if somebody wants to kill me, it's so easy to do it, and it's no need to shoot in the air. You could shoot directly at you. So I just fled away, because if something bad happened to me, who will look over my family?
So you received a letter threatening you to stop writing, or to change,
they didn't
to change
say
the direction?
They no. They just said that you are ila sahba. I still recall it very well. The letter states ila sahafi al fasiq.
I think you clarified everything.
No, I didn't. You know, anyone could say it. So I just went. I contacted friends living in Switzerland, and even I was helped by the news agency that I was working for to find a way.
Was there a demand from you to do something, or was it just an attack?
No. Just the way I was writing. I remembered I wrote one article in a DR newspaper. It was really tough. It's a column. The title was Al-Dahiya Al-Udhiya. I was talking about the war that erupted in Al-Dahiya, southern suburbs in Lebanon, between
the brothers.
And how Al-Dahiya, the suburbs, were addressing to them, and you...
Yeah, for the audience who don't know, at that time, there was a clash between Hezbollah, which was a faction that separated from the Amal movement, and there was a very fierce fighting between Hezbollah and the Amal movement for a few years, after which peace was reached, and now they are, of course, allies within the Lebanese
politics. So I took the decision to move out, and I did it. I went to Switzerland. I continued working as a journalist, sending articles and other things to certain magazines and newspapers, and at the time I was working other things. I stayed there till 1991, I received a phone call from Lebanon telling me to come back because, you know, in 1982, I...
How did you go to Switzerland, Sweden? Was it a refugee?
Switzerland.
Oh, Switzerland, not
Switzerland.
Switzerland, was it?
No, it wasn't. I didn't apply for... I could have applied for political asylum, but I didn't want to.
So you went with a visa?
No. I went with a visa to Italy, and then from Italy we crossed the borders, and then when you are in, you could get the help needed. And I did a lot of things in Switzerland. I created a newspaper, a local newspaper.
In Arabic?
In Arabic, me and some of the friends down there, we were cutting, writing, cutting, and it's really, really, really funny. And we were sending it to Lebanese who we have addresses by mail. And
did you contemplate staying in Switzerland? I mean, you are in one of the best countries in the world.
I could have stayed, But as I was mentioning that in 1982, I passed an exam to join the...
1982. Oh, okay.
To join the diplomatic corps at Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
And I passed.
1982?
82.
That's but before everything.
Before everything. But mm-hmm. unfortunately, mm-hmm. we were not appointed right away.
Mm-hmm.
We passed the exam, 24 of us. 18 were appointed and 6 were left for 10 years waiting mm-hmm. till 1992.
So is that before you worked for the magazine?
No, I was working since 1978 with the magazine.
Okay, so it came... It,
yeah, along
an
with...
An opportunity came
yeah,
along
I just,
and you applied.
I just okay. applied and it was, you know, somebody asked me this before. Why did you chosen this diplomatic? I mean, it's not you. I had my bachelor in Arabic literature.
Mm-hmm.
So why going into another a different direction? You know, political. I mean, diplomatic affairs. It means. You have to have political studies, political science, economical, financial, institutional, laws, etc. I have nothing to do with that. I don't know anything about that. Only some general informations. That's it. So it was a matter of defining myself. I, the one who doesn't know anything about this, I want to go into it, but I want to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I did it.
Mm-hmm.
I did it. Yani, it was amazing that out of 200, we passed 24. And I remember one who was just sitting beside me in the exam. He was a Sorbonne graduate. A Sorbonne graduate. And he failed.
Mm.
Sorbonne graduate in law.
Wow.
He failed and I passed.
Mm-hmm.
So, but unfortunately, as I told you that, for 10 years we were waiting. I forgot about it when I went to Switzerland. Khalas, over.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I had this phone call from one of the 4 remaining 6. He called me and he said, you have to come back.
Why without should I come back? Without any wasta, without any...
If I had the wasta, I would have been...
Long time ago. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so
I
that get, was 1991?
1991, I was called to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back. To Lebanon.
So that's after the Tifaq Taif, the Taif agreement.
Yeah, yeah.
So Lebanon is stable.
Stable. And at that time, Rafiq Hariri, Allah irhamu, he...
Became the...
Not yet. He started, I mean, he took over the cabinet on 1992.
Hmm.
But 1991, he was there. His his company was working on rebuilding.
Yeah.
So I went back to Lebanon and I waited for about 6 months or 7 months till they signed the decree for us and I started my diplomatic career in 1992.
In Beirut?
In Beirut, yeah.
And you left journalism at that point?
Yes. You cannot continue as a journalist.
Right.
It's over.
Did you bring your family back with you?
Yeah. I could. I had the chance
Did
to stay.
Did you have reassurances that the threat is gone?
Yeah.
1992, you started your diplomatic career, Dr. Ali Ajami, Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Beirut.
Yeah.
Up to 1994, where you were assigned to Cairo.
Yeah.
In 1994, you moved to Cairo with your family.
Yes.
Until 1996. Tell us about the Cairo journey.
You know, it was, to me, the best place to live in. The Egyptians are so nice people, so so funny, so moderate, so modest, and you could live an easy life in Egypt. It's really, really interesting. Beside this, you know, the cultural aspect of Cairo is overwhelming. Talking about Najib Mahfouz, talking about the museums, all that, I mean... I was there for 2 years, and then I was appointed to Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Now, during these 2 years, how did Egypt affect you? Did Egypt leave anything different, Dr. Ali Ajami?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any special communication with any of the intellectuals of Egypt?
Yeah, I remember I had a very close relation with one of the major Egyptian artists. His name was... he's a painter. His name is Ahmed... what's the family name? I think he's the only Egyptian painter that his paintings are here exhibited in New York. I'm just trying to remember his family name. He's very. I had 2-3 paintings of him at my house in Lebanon. Mm. Yeah.
And did you visit anywhere in Egypt? You were stationed in Cairo.
In Cairo, I went to Luxor and Aswan. Mm-hmm. And this, I advise anyone to take this cruise.
Mm. And of course, you visited the Ahram in Giza.
For sure. It's nearby, Ahram in Giza.
What was your impression? We grow up as Arab, hearing about them. And when you go there, is it any different?
It will startle you when you just come to first look on it. What's this? The first impression when you go by the car and you've just, it comes in front of you. Wow! It's huge. Mm-hmm. You cannot, nobody could deny it. It's huge. And it's on the western bank of the Nile. Mm-hmm. And this is something also for the audience to know about it. This also I knew when I was there. Everything related to life is built on the eastern part of the Nile. And everything exhibits death or related to death, it's done in the west
side
of the Nile. That's why, you know, the pyramids are tombs.
Mm-hmm.
While all the huge temples for worships and all that stuff, it's on the eastern part of the Nile. But from Luxor to Aswan, amazing. Amazing. I advise you, my dear friend, go there.
Yeah.
It's really. You know that more than a third of the international ruins sites are in Luxor and Aswan?
Wow.
More, about a third of them. Mm. See, amazing.
Mm.
I remember this, you know, the Obelix.
Mm-hmm.
There's the huge Obelix in Luxor. It's about 40 meters high, made of granite. Down, I think, the measurements is about maybe 4 meters by 4 meters, and then it started narrowing till the top. Imagine this, 4 meters of granite high, one piece, one single piece. Where did they bring it from? Knowing that in all the area of Luxor, there's no granite rocks at all. They brought it from Aswan, which is about 3 days, at least by ship, at least 3 days to reach. How did they carry it? They've done huge things there.
Huge civilization.
If you go to the Valley of Kings and Queens, wow, amazing, amazing.
One incident before we go to Brazil, where you stayed for 3 years, doctor. For 3 years. I want to just have your comments on a couple things before we end this episode and start next episode in Brasilia. The two things is, number one, the peace treaty between Israel and Egypt in 1979. What was your... you as an individual and also the environment, what was the reaction to that peace treaty?
Anyone who is really loyal to his beliefs would oppose it. See, as a result of that treaty, what's happening now? I believe that every ugly, bad things happening to the Arab world started by that step. And you know, always when you start giving, you won't stop giving. And this is the way Israel benefited from this they demand something from you, you give them. After a while, oh, this is not enough. Give me some more. Give me some more. Give me some more. See, if you recall the map of Palestine, the division that took place in 1947 by the United Nations Security Council when they divided Palestine into two parts. What now, if you compare it with the actual map now on the ground, what remained of the Arabic, Palestinian Arabic?
It's the opposite now.
There's nothing. Even you couldn't find even 10%. It's all gone. And I believe that is a result of all.
But it was the Arabs that rejected it at that time.
Yeah.
Seeing it as unfair, and it will displace them. Doctor, and the second incident I want to ask you about is 1991, the first Gulf War.
Yeah.
Also, how did you receive that as a journalist at that time?
To me, I feel that it was this kind of invasion to our culture, to our principles, to our dignity. It was really a real invasion. You know, if somebody would just think of it, why the Americans did it, why the coalition, 1991, and then the other one, 2003. Mm-hmm. Why? Was there a real mass destruction weapons? It was just a joke. Usually...
In 1991, it was about Kuwait.
Yeah, it was even a joke. Even the Kuwaitis, it was really a joke. It wasn't that. You think that... who drove Saddam Hussein to go down there?
Everybody knows. The yellow light, yes.
Then April Gillespie, the American ambassador at that time to Baghdad, she told him that we don't test something internally.
Could proceed do whatever. With caution.
Yeah. So the problem that we are acting and reacting as really fools, we don't know exactly what are our main interests. Mm-hmm. Each one is... fighting on his own terms, each part of the Arabs, I mean, in general. And don't forget the big gap between the Arabs as people and the Arabs as governors. So, if you would ask me, how do you look to the future? It's black. I don't feel there is some kind of light approaching in the tunnel, as they say always, you know, you have to look at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
I don't think there's an end to the tunnel. There's no end.
Well, it's when you realize how dark it is, that's the first glimpse of light. So we take this as
a hopeful
analysis.
I hope so.
Of the situation. Ending this episode on a positive note, Doctor, thank you very much for the information and your witness of history. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for following us. If you'd like to sponsor these episodes or support the efforts of Dearborn Blog or all the other organizations that are participating in publishing this series, please visit us at dearbornblog.com/partner. Thank you and see you next time in the third episode of The Diplomat, starting in 1990. 294, actually 96 in Brasilia. Thank you.